Do you know who was named the best putting mat in 2022 by My Golf Spy? It was the mats from Birdie Ball. It'll help you sink more putts and make more birdies with a Birdie Ball putting green, all in the comfort of your own home. Check out Birdie Ball online at birdieball.com. Birdie Ball is here to make golf more fun and accessible. Find out more at birdieball.com.
Welcome to Grilling at the Green After Hours, the conversation that took place after the show ended.
Hi, everybody. It's JT, and this is a special version of Grilling at the Green. Grilling at the Green is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your family and friends. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. Welcome back to Grilling at the Green, or I should say welcome to After Hours. I kind of tricked Simon into this part, so he might forgive me for this, but I'm joking. We've talking with Simon Millington from Golf Brands Incorporated in Henderson, Nevada. One thing I didn't get to in the regular show, Simon, was do you think the brick and mortar golf businesses, I mean, you've got big ones, you've got Dick's and you've got Golf Galaxy, you've got the PGA Superstore, you know, I can go on a little bit there. But do you think the smaller brick and mortar, if you will, the mom and pops are going to survive because so many people can do business off the internet?
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting because there's one big group that has about 70 stores with Allspads as the sort of the lead of those. And you know, they're like a buying group of individual stores. So sure. They're really an interesting group. I mean, the one thing I would say is, you know, and it would go back to going to when I was a kid, you know, sport obsessed, going into this local sports shop where the guy owned it was the guy in the shop. And I loved that place. I knew it like the back of my hand. I mean, it was, you know, it was fantastic. And I still think you get from an independent retailer, and I hope they do continue in business, because you get a different level of service to me. You know, you know, the way I feel when I go in there, it's like you go and talk to an independent guy. You're probably talking to the guy who owns the shop. He really understands. When you go in some of these big box golf stores, you know, I'll walk in and they'll say, "Can I help you?" And I really want to say, I think that's unlikely, but you know, here we are. But you know, whereas you go in these smaller shops, and you know, I've taken before, you know, one time, you know, I've taken some clubs in to be repaired in some of these places, these big box ones. And I mean, like, it's embarrassing to see the work that comes out of some of them and stuff like that. Whereas I think if you go to your local guy, there's a guy who's perhaps been doing it for 25 years and he knows right. What he's doing, and he's an expert. And I think, so I really hope that those independents do survive and even thrive, you know, and be kind of brave enough to go and open and compete against these big guys. Because to me, I'd much rather go in a smaller golf store that's got the same stuff in but packed, and you're getting a hands that you're talking to a real good golf guy as opposed to a shop assistant. And you know, that's what I hope. You know, I really hope that they thrive. And I mean, does it die out because people are not going to be brave enough necessarily to open a golf store in the same town that there's a Golf Galaxy or a PGA Tour Superstore? You know. Maybe, but I certainly hope that they survive and thrive. You know,
where I live, Simon, it's a little it's a little weird. Anyway, that is always the saying, like, keep Oregon weird. But we have a Golf Galaxy. We have Dick's, of course, and they're kind of one and the same. We've got Golf Tech and that. But when we had what was the big? Golfsmith. Thank you. I've had a little brain fade there. They went out, and we actually saw a couple of local stores. One in Portland that is owned by three friends. They're all in their 30s and 40s. They're very assertive, and they took that from a little hole in the wall store that was basically a repair place from years ago. The guy got tired. They bought the thing, and they're booming. Yeah. You know, they're actually booming because of the customer service that you spoke of. And I think that is so important. And even the pro shops at the clubs, I've noticed that the pro shops have shrunk their inventory a little bit because it's hard for them to compete. I think pro shops, and you could tell me this, did pro shops always work on a little higher margin than the mom and pops?
I mean, Possibly. I think part of it is, you know, essentially that golf pros or the golf, that sort of golf course thing is, I think it's an easy way out to just not do it. I mean, there's map pricing, you know, the pricing's pretty fixed on the golf industry, you know, right. It's by the manufacturers. And I think, you know, to me, the golf pros have got it the easiest of everybody. And I'm not knocking golf pros at this point, but, you know, if you like, they have a captive audience, they're giving lessons. I mean, if you really want to work hard and be in, particularly in the clubs, you know, they'll do clothing and the soft goods and that's it. But they kind of gave up a little bit. And I think custom fits helped bring some of that back. But I do think, you know, you've got to be able to say, if I'm teaching you to play golf, I really want to make sure that I should be the one selling you golf clubs. And conversely, the golfers, I would tell a golfer, if you're going to buy a set of golf clubs that you want to try and stuff, go and do it with a golf pro with a lesson to make sure, you know, if that's what you're going to do, as opposed to going into a big box retailer, I'd go and have somebody, because, you know, I've talked at length with people about this, is like, how do you fit somebody? So people go in for a fitting, but they get fitted by perhaps not an expert, but maybe good. Let's assume they're good at it. But if you put a bad swing on, they're going to fit you for that bad swing. Now, and it's happened, I've seen people come back from major manufacturers with terrible fittings because they've gone there, you know, then when the, you know, one came back from with a 4-degree upright set of irons because he came over the top of it when he was nervous. That was his bad swings. He got fitted for that. Now, I think you should fit for the golfer's physicality. It's like, you know, I'm 6'4", so I'm plus 3/4 inch. I'm 1 degree upright, stiff, right? That's it. I know what I need. And I think, you know, the problem is people get fitted by people who don't necessarily know about their golf swing, but they can look at a computer and say, well, this, you hit this one better. But it doesn't necessarily translate right into that golf swing of the day. And so I think I'm a great believer in fitting people correctly and saying to them, look, get fitted, get this. This is what you should actually, we build the clubs for. Then have some lessons. Spend the savings with us on lessons. You're going to be a better golfer. You know, when you see people spending, you know, beginners spending $3,000 on a set of golf clubs, it's like, spend $500 and $2,500 on lessons. I guarantee you can be a better player.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because I had a friend who shall remain nameless, but he's a golf pro and all that. And he gets, you know, he's on one of the major brands, pro lists, you know, that's what he sells in his, through his website, through his lessons and all that. And I had never hit a golf ball in front of him before. And he was like, well, come on down. I'm going to bring some clubs up, meet you at the range, and we're going to do this. So he comes in with this bag of clubs and it looks like something out of Caddyshack, you know, it's like just full stuff, and he goes, well, hit this one, and then hit this one, and he's changing the heads and all this, and it actually kind of made me nervous. And Simon, I'm sculling balls right and left, you know, and I'm not getting them more than, you know, 20 feet off the ground or something, because he made me nervous. He's a nice guy and I like him, but he made me nervous as hell. And I'm out there doing this, and he goes, well, and he's taking notes and all this, and it's like, dude, this is not the way I hit my golf ball all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's it. That's what you don't need to be fitted for.
Right.
You know, that's on that bad day. That's what I say. It's like, fit you for what you actually need. Is like, you know, I'm all for swing speed and, you know, getting the shaft right. You know, you get your how tall, you know, hands, wrist to floor measurements and all these parts of it, grip size. But that's really, I think, what you should build a golf club around, not bad golf swings. You know, it's like, if just spend some money on lessons and that. The clubs are now right for you. Now get the golf swing right for you. You know, if you're swinging that badly, I just don't think it's the answer to have golf clubs fitted for a bad swing.
You know, I agree with you. And I'll tell you something else. Of all the people I've had on the show, and we've been doing this show for what, 7 years now or something, you're the first person that ever said that. Yeah. Even all the fitting people I've had on over the years, and I like them all. They're great people. I've played golf with some of them. It's a lot of fun. But you're the first person that ever said about the fitting and having a bad day, or maybe the person being nervous. They've never addressed that. So kudos to you.
It's what they do, right? And it's how they sell it. But like I say, from my perspective, it just doesn't make sense. And I've seen the horror stories that come with it. And I don't think you get a horror story when you go, these clubs are right for your height. You know, we've sponsored for a number of years, and he's a great friend of mine, Ian Woosnam. Now, he's 5'4". he's not easy to fit. He's 5'4". He has a, 3 degrees flat. He's, and hits it as good as anybody you'll ever see. But, you've got to fit him for physicality. It's like, there's no good if he puts a bad swing on and going, you need him 1 degree upright. He's a 3 degree flat guy, and you've got to sort of work on that physical attribute first and his setup to get that right, versus, this is what the computer says. Well, I honestly don't care what the computer says, because that's like you say, even if you stand in front of the golf pro and you're topping it and he goes, all right, he's writing notes. It's like, yeah, the note should say, let's get some lessons before we get the clubs.
Right.
So
that's all good. With all the couple of personal comments here from you, perhaps, and then we'll do a couple, three fun questions that I put people on the spot with, just make them think. The changes in the golf world, especially the changes, there are big discussions over the years about, roll back the ball, roll back the head dimensions on the drivers, so on and so on and so on. Kind of give us your overview on all those things. Because you're a man that's right in the middle of it.
Yeah, listen, I actually fully understand both sides of it. I understand the industry saying we're trying to make it better, more fun for the average golfer. I also understand that, if you look at the tour, the golf courses that have been played on tour are becoming not fit for purpose. Now, I went and played in Scotland last year, and, you play St. Andrews. It's St. Andrews, so it's fantastic to go there and play golf. Right. I'd recommend anybody to do it. Is it a great golf course now at 6,400 yards off the tips? No, it's not. Wind makes it interesting, but it's not a challenging links golf course. And you go and play Carnoustie down the road, that's still fit for it, right? But St. Andrews isn't, and golf courses can't evolve like Augusta does, where they'll buy a lump of land and they'll build the hole suddenly is 50 yards longer, and they keep toughening their golf course. And actually Woozy was a great one. He was a great believer in the ball needed some adjustment, and what he talked about, which was quite interesting, is not rolling back the ball in terms of distance, but stopping the fact, making the ball spin more, so that if you want to try and hit it really hard and drive a green, like you see Rory drive a 400 yard green,
right,
you can do that, but the ball is going to spin more, so you get more side spin. Now the ball's going to go, if you miss it, it's going to be worse, because golf balls now, they go straighter as well, so that was quite an interesting view on it, of if it would take a lot of governing, certainly in tour level. But I do think it needs to be governed. I think the golf ball is the easy, they govern the drivers, to an extent, people might try and work around it, it's largely governed. But I don't think, it's, and I think really we're talking about the professional game. I don't think for the, that we're going to see massive changes for the consumer.
Right.
But I think for the professional game, can you have golf courses that people are driving par fours and, par fives, a driver wedge and stuff like that? They become poor events for that. When you see the great courses, when you see them playing at Sawgrass or at Bay Hill, or you go and see open courses and stuff like that, they're proper golf courses, and they remain a great challenge. But if you so many of these other tour events, and you see people shooting 30 under, and I know it doesn't necessarily matter and it might still be good for the audience, but aren't the tournaments like Sawgrass and Bay Hill better when you've got tougher holes and you've got more chance? If somebody's got a 3-shot lead at some of these courses, you go, well, they're going to win because there's nothing, they can't, to drop 3 shots in the last 3 holes, they're too easy for them, whereas you go and see those really great courses, Augusta always has that, when you come through 13 and 15 and 16, it's an easy par three, but, suddenly it gets hooked in the water, and then, 18 is a fantastic finishing hole, when you stand on that back tee at Augusta, it's so narrow and it's but there's not courses like that enough. And you can't, I see your background being Sheep Ranch, when that blows up there, that's, these golf courses, but they're built for sort of modern day, I call them like a modern day links golf course, the modern day take, and it's, but the wind can make that a whole different game up there, so.
Yeah. I always thought, at Augusta, instead of calling it Amen Corner, they should have called it Holy. Fill in your own adjective after that.
But I was lucky. I caddied for Woozy in 2 Masters. And when you come down to that corner, I mean, it's quite surreal down there because it gets kind of quite, when you come, 11 is so difficult and it's such a difficult hole. And then 12 kind of, you stand there and look and go, it's not really that hard, but it's so narrow, the green. And then 13 is like the quietest part, you know, 12th green and 13 is so quiet because there's no spectators. It's kind of bizarre there, you know? So it's just, yeah, you know, that golf course, it can produce so much. You know, if you've got a 4-shot lead, 5-shot lead, you saw Faldo take Greg Norman down that time, you know, there's not enough of a lead to feel comfortable
as you come
in that back nine. So.
Right. So quick question though, if you were caddying for Woozy, did the coveralls fit you down there?
I've got to say they did. They were a bit tricky to get across over the shoulders with the button up thing. So I had to have a bit of a, luckily, it was quite surreal, but it was an incredible experience. But yeah, I did have to have help. It wasn't so much getting them on. It was getting them off was the challenge.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. A couple of fun questions for you here, Simon. If you could play a round of golf with one of your golfing heroes, they can be alive or not. Who would it be?
Sebi.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
I think that would just be really, really fun. And if you could dine with a historical figure, who would it be and what would be on the menu? And I would come cook for you if you wanted. But the point is, who would the historical figure be and what would be on the menu?
Does he have to be a golfer or anybody?
No, anybody.
Do you know, I think it'd be Winston Churchill. He loved drinking champagne. And yeah. I think I'd be okay with that. and he looked like he, you know, enjoyed a good meal. So, yeah.
I heard something the other day. I don't know if it's true or not. And I actually saw it in a TV show. So it could have just been made up. But, you know, when Churchill was back in the war and stuff, and he'd have his cigars and he'd have that big long ash on it. And what he did is he took a hat pin and stuck it in the cigar. And so people were always thinking that the ash would fall or when it would fall, and it never fell like that. I never knew that.
Yeah, it kept the focus on him because they'd stare at his cigar, so they'd listen to him.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. If you could erase one mistake from your past, what would it be, if any?
Ooh, I mean, that's a good question, isn't it? What would it be? I don't know. I kind of don't. I'm not somebody who kind of looks in the rearview mirror, really. I don't have too many regrets, you know. It's like, if you from a business perspective, you know, you have things go wrong and bad things happen, but you kind of, if you learn from them, I kind of think that's part of life, right?
Sure.
Do I wish I'd done stuff earlier than I did? You know, I wish if I'd known about going out to, you know, getting Brad, just, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, I'm just not somebody really. That's looks okay. back with a ton of regrets. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. If you were declared supreme ruler of golf, the edict came down from on high and Simon Millington is the supreme ruler of golf for just one day though, what would you decree as supreme ruler of golf?
Am I allowed two things?
You're the supreme ruler.
Right. Firstly, divots on the fairway. You've all been in there. It's completely and utterly ridiculous. It's the ultimate ground under repair. So I would change the rule that if you are on the fairway, anywhere on the fairway, if you're on the short grass, you can pick place clean within 6 inches. You shouldn't have mud on your ball and you shouldn't be in a divot. It's ridiculous that you get punished for being in the middle of the fairway. That would be day one. The other thing I would do is I think we have an antiquated, this is from a manufacturing point of view, but also the golfer's enjoyment. I think we have an antiquated rule that you're allowed 14 golf clubs in your bag. It goes back to, used to be back in the day, it was 1, 2, 3, 4 woods. It was 3 to sand iron and a putter. That was your 14 clubs. But now people have hybrids and they have lofted, you know, they have lofted wedges. They have, you know, they want to hit a 7 wood. They want to have these things. What does it matter in terms of that? And I don't care, you know, if they made it 15 or 16, allow people, instead of having to go, I've got to take my 4 iron out, or I've got to take a wedge out, or I want to hit, you know, I need this. And just let people, what does it matter if people have more than 14 clubs? I mean, obviously the conversation, you know, that people would always go back to Ian Woosnam, who I keep mentioning there, but obviously he famously had 15 and lost 2 shots in the Open. But I honestly don't. I think if I, so, in answer to your question, if that was it, I would say, hey, right, let's add a couple of clubs. You don't need to take anything out of your bag to want to be a better golfer, you know, and have more fun.
I would say if, especially, I mean, if they want to keep that rule for the pros, I don't have a problem with it. But for the amateur players, the regular weekend warrior guys, have at it. Yeah, that's what
but even even the pros, and I do agree with you. But even the pros, I mean, why is it 14 clubs? I mean, literally, why? Yeah. You know, I mean, and if the pros, they've still got to execute the shot, right? You know, so and if they, I think it makes it more interesting if you've got, you know, like Mickelson used to carry two drivers, right? You know, he'd have a small headed one and stuff like that. It makes it interesting. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple more here, Simon, and then we'll. Release you from your bonds here. If we put your skills to music, what would the music be?
Oh my word, this is some good questions. What would it be? What would it be in a song? I don't know. I can't honestly think. Oh, just trying to think. Oh, yes, let's go my way. Let's do a bit of Frank Sinatra.
Okay, all right. Very good. Very good. Here's one that I think will make you scratch your head. What would your last meal be on death row?
Oh, is it just a main course? Are we talking?
Yeah, whatever you want.
I'm a food guy.
Yeah, whatever you want.
I'm going to have to go Cajun ribeye with some lobster.
My man, that is good. That is good. That is good. Last question here. This is your opportunity. What would Simon Millington's message to the world be?
Be happy. Just be happy.
Excellent.
You know,
excellent.
And you know, you look at it, you know, there's so much sad, you know, people, there's such terrible things like this. You know, it just, you know, I like I say, I'm a bit, I don't look backwards, just look forwards, be happy.
There you go. Simon Millington from Golf Brands Inc. Down in Henderson. You can find them all over the web. Thanks for taking the time to be with us here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been
no problem. We'll be back next week with another edition of Grilling at the Green After Hours. Until then, for Simon and myself, go out, play some golf, smile, and have some fun. Take care, everybody.